but we'd love to hear more about kind of how your story, how this artistic aspect came about. Because I grew up in a Korean church my whole life, and I never heard or even thought that going back to our roots or tradition was necessary or even a valuable. We always sang, you know, hymns. And then the second I got a chance to do more contemporary stuff with guitar and drums, we just switched right over to that. And there was that CCM or Christian, you know, contemporary Christian movement in Korea at the same time. So we just borrowed songs from them. And it seems like there was, it was always this move towards more kind of modern or contemporary, almost Christian industry music. And so this fact that we're going to go backwards is really somehow exciting to me, because now I'm very tired of, you know, I actually spent some time living in Nashville, Tennessee, and I don't know if you know anything about Nashville, Tennessee, but it's considered like
capital of the rock.
It's music. It's like a music capital, music city, and particularly for Christian music, it's a big help. So all your Christian artists come out of Nashville, and living there was almost, you see kind of like, you can get really caught up into it and excited, like, oh, wow, did you hear this new artist? And that was exciting for a time until you realized, I have friends that work in the music industry, and they're saying there's no difference between a Christian music group and a kind of secular music group. And so then you kind of think, okay, so they're just doing this for the money? And they're just concerned about their image. And he was like, oh, yeah. Sometimes they're very picky. They're divas. And I remember being shocked. Like, how do you lead worship if you're a diva? So I remember becoming very disenchanted with that form of worship. And I think I'm very excited to hear about this kind of push for an ancient or more traditional mode of worship that I've never heard in our churches.
I'm not sure whether I'm pushed for that.
Well, it's not but, a push, but even the exploration, the question.
I think I'm just experimenting with it at this stage. It's the same question, because I was raised and educated in Western musical world realm. So kind of asking my own heritage and what is the Korean means. I remember the line saying, if we just close our eyes, it really doesn't, there's no difference between the Western church or the Korean church or Asian church. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, if you have a heart surgery, transplant surgery of someone else's heart transplanted in you, are you a different person? Or it's who you are and what makes you who you are, right? You know, not necessarily for. But then again, the way that which we identify to associate with others, that expression, what is that uniqueness, and what is that that standing out cultural identity? That is a question. Always being on my mind, so well, I don't know how it started. I wasn't who I am until finding out the history, whether it was romantic or whether it was realistic. And I think that longingness to go back to Korea, finding the heritage.
How old were you? Like, was this kind of an adolescent thing?
I came when I was 14. And so, without speaking the word of English at the time. So that was a big change in adolescence age. So 8th grade, transferring into the middle school, and graduating and going to high school, as confused age as it can be. But then living as a first child of 5, I often worked as a kind of a bridge person, a translator for my parents. So a lot of big responsibility in that way, that I couldn't let that Korean side go as my younger siblings were freer in their adaptation. So they speak much better English than I am.
English is great.
Well, as I had to work extra hard, but then for my siblings, as the youngest one, we were 10 years of difference, and John, the youngest one, doesn't speak Korean that much. On that last Thanksgiving day, that my mother tells me that he was invited to, she was invited to her, his girlfriend's home for a Thanksgiving meal, and the girlfriend happens to be adopted Korean, came as early, and she doesn't speak a word of Korean at all. And compared to her, my brother speaks better Korean, so at least she was able to translate for my mother. You know, so that's the kind of the setting I was in, and then because of that, I was halfway in between. That I had that longingness to seek what's, you know, how does Korean people worship? How does Korean people express? What do they favor? And a crucial time as it is, being in that eighth grade, middle school, the fate is that my oldest son, Daniel, when I decide to go to Korea, because Yonsei University called me as their worship, first ever worship and preaching professor, he was eighth grade, just graduating. So it's kind of
reversal.
And after having spent five years in Korea, coming out, the second child was also graduated and coming here as a ninth grade. So it runs on our family to be on that age. And all of our common trait is being bilingual. What people say perfect bilingual, I don't think there's such thing as perfect bilingual. You always feel deficient in one way or the other. But the setting that which you are right in the middle, the feeling that you can appreciate both culture and kind of being a hybrid in a sense. This is a different thinking process. And satisfied with what you have, at the same time always willing to take the risk to venture the new things. I think that's how I was made up and how I was reared, brought up. So in the faith matter, works the same way. You know? Another dilemma here for me is the music and theology. I was trained as a musician as early on. Never doubted that I would not go into the ministry from the early on. But then people ask me, "What? Then why do you study music?" I don't know. I just like it. You know, being in a college, went to Wheaton College as a Bible major, thinking that I would enter seminary. But then, second semester junior year, if I'm going to be, engage in this theological world all my life, maybe I need to learn something else. So I switched to the music major. And that was an easier way for me to graduate too, because I've been taking lessons, cello lessons, and being in the orchestra. I was trained as a musician from a younger period. So it wasn't a switch, but same thing, two things happening at the same time. Musical vocabulary versus the biblical vocabulary. And often it's a dual identity. But then learning to dialogue or become that bridge person to do both in a way. and also finding that I always feel deficient in one area versus the other, and always trying to compensate. I think that kind of kept me as an inner drive to go for my final degree on PhD in worship. We call it liturgical studies. Because I was not happy with the church as theology alone. I was not happy with being a church musician. Just that kind of limited, because they are not never talking to one another. It's always a separate, you know. And so if I would study worship that would combine them both, would I be in a place where I can find myself as who I am? Same thing as our dual identity, as being who Korean side or the American side. And then I met just one line in one of the worship book that I was reading, say, we are by nature, we are all bilingual when we come to worship.
And wow. Really?
Yeah. That thesis is that we live, the ambiguity that we live in this world, we speak the language of heaven, and also we speak the language of the world at the same time, ambiguous as it is, but we are there to translate or inform from one word to the other. That kind of struck me. That's where we are at. That is the gift and the tool and the skill that which we are. We've been asked to experience, obtain, or to foster, or to enjoy in a way. So when the word ambiguous comes to me, I welcome it because there's always the other side to it. Artistic metaphors or the symbols has a wonderful way of expressing that both at the same time. Isn't it? If you are telling just one thing, it's a sign. You see a stop sign, you stop for it, right? But then there's a yellow sign, yellow light. We have to choose in one of the two actions you take. Which one do you take?
Oh, like a yellow light?
Yeah, yellow light.
I mean, I don't want to incriminate
Depends
myself.
On the situation.
Depends. I try to make the light.
Do you?
Yeah, I try to go.
You try to go? Usually? Okay. What do? You stop?
Yeah, I try to go.
Okay.
We're all Asian. I have a little bit of impatience.
Yeah.
Although I've noticed with my daughter in the car, I would be more prone to stop.
Okay, change your behavior then.
Yeah. Or if I'm going with other people.
It's a context. And how you interpret that sign, and then it becomes a symbol, isn't it? If you just look at an object, or see or hear and just do one action, take one action of that is a sign. But then you are stopping to see, there's another meaning to it, another action that I can take. It becomes a symbol. And that is the rich, the word that which we can enter, ambiguous as it is. Yeah, but so fascinating, especially when we come to worship, that not everybody will see or hear or do in the same way as we intended for them to behave.
May I ask something?
Sure.
Then what's the difference between red sign and yellow sign? Mm-hmm. They are the same as the sign, right? But they're saying you are not always that much attracted by the red sign, I mean, the red side means something is for sure.
Yeah.
You always just attracted by ambiguous thing, something that left you more room for interpretation.
Right. Well, I wouldn't go when the red sign comes. You know, that's a knife and death situation, right? But on our mundane, regular day activities, being able to spot it out like that, you know, same, but trying to make a meaning out of the yellow sign.
Racially symbolic here. Liminal space, in between two certainties gives you room for.
But the reason why I asked that question earlier for this meeting, we talk about why there are not that many, you know, Korean art in, you know, Korean church, right? Many Korean they go to a church for
certainty.
They had hard time to accept ambiguity because our life itself is very unpredictable, and we want to find certain, you know, shelter for them.
That's a good point.
But they can be.
But then, theory against it is that once you are fully nourished and strengthened, and you're not going to stay there, the ambiguity calls you to take action, further action, leave, or contribute, or, you know, go into the next step. We cannot always assume that you're going to be comforted, or
You may find it to be a lie. Like if I remember when my father-in-law passed away this year, Jacob, you were actually leading worship, but I remember you were singing the song Marvelous Light, and there's that one line where it says something about death, where is your sting? And I remember I stopped singing because at that moment death stung a lot. Like death was really, you know, I couldn't sing that line and be honest with the worship. So I remember thinking, even though I know that's true in a maybe eschatological sense, or, you know, when Jesus comes, death will have no sting, I'm in that in-between. I'm in my life is, like you said, ambiguous. So to worship like something that wasn't as ambiguous as well felt like a lie. Like I just felt like that's so cheap of an answer. Like right now, it stings a lot. So if this worship doesn't acknowledge my pain or my kind of reality, then it's like, this is a lie. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the paradox of our life and death. And unless that we recognize that, you know, that difference together, that God is God of life as well as God of death, and that all belongs to that, and there's no issue that is not worthy enough to be handled in the worship setting.
But we avoid a lot of issues.
Yeah, we avoid. Intentionally we avoid because we think we are afraid, we think people cannot handle it. But I'm finding, you know, maybe certain time at certain stages, yes, the unity may be more important than diversity. But then we live in the postmodern era that diversity is encouraged and accepted. But then why, when we come to church, we just single out, you know, just one thing, you know, kind of make us all dumbing down, that's Marva Dawn's expression, you know, and become, but there is a room for it too, you know, I'm not denying it, but then we just lose our sensitivity because of that, as who we are. We lose this, the ability to reaching out to others. We are just kind of trained in just one single-minded behavior characteristic as we worship. Otherwise, you know, all other things are not important. You know, we are making a statement as we worship, aren't we? And we are encouraging that behavior as we do it and reinforcing it. So people who are not accustomed to used to becomes kind of, you know, sidetracked if you don't behave in a certain way. That happens a lot. Well, so who decides that? could the leaders actually make the choice? Probably not. It's a community. It's a, usually cultural thing, unspoken. And some prophetic minds, you know, when we see that really touches, and then people slowly copying that behavior, or that's the whole realm of the study. In an academic setting that we call the ritual studies, and anthropological behavioral patterns and all that can be analyzed and diagnosed to see, I never thought in that way, or, you know. So, along in that line, being an Asian American, or I love that phrase, next generation, generation.
Generation.
Yeah, generation, generation. What is that intended cultural behavior code that which we can explore or encourage or to, because there's a certain element that which attracts us as who we are, and shared identity formation is happening, and why, even among Asians, the East Asians, the Chinese, Japanese, Vietnamese, Korean, feel more close, needed, than other Asians, perhaps? Well, your case is very exceptional. The Indian.
Because of my wife, yeah.
Yeah. So there is, you know, the ramification, the ways that which we can, the ancestral worship has to do with the Chinese language as the common heritage, also has a lot to do with it too. I think each country, for my Chinese counterpart, is Ito Lo, who taught at Taiwan. Does a lot of indigenous Chinese music into the Christian hymnody. And that's where I was exposed. And he's the one who actually taught me the Korean, authentic Korean hymns, that which I brought here as an example. I didn't learn from other Koreans, I learned from Ito.
I was wondering where you learned it.
Yeah.
I've never.
Because that's, he's the one, as an editor, and he has worked with other Korean composers and introduced those songs to the World Council of Churches. So before the Koreans ever got to it, that became, you know, made it the other way around, that it was known to the other Western church people, and they are asking, how do I sing this? You know, I look at it, that really has a good beauty in it, you know, expression. That was the kind of my hook, I would say, you know, hooked on to find more, and being an ambassador. Yeah, that may work and that may not work, you know. See, it's not I think we are working against the popularism here. And the pop culture as young people versus what is that authentic, genuine expression that was way before our time, but also that will last long after I'm gone.
Right.
I think that is the kind of criteria and the question that I'm raising. But at the same time, the church has to pick this up. Unless it is popularized, it also will die out too. Yeah, so we cannot really neglect any one aspect, because we are together all around. But again, that bicultural, bilingual setting, being able to see two different settings and not feel guilty following one or the other, but actually writing on it, you know, and and being able to see two at the same time. Hmm. Always balancing it out. You know, I think it's a constant effort to remove myself from that main, you know, majority group. But then again, entering in when I gain the confidence in and out, in and out. Does it make sense? I mean, I hope I'm not talking about an abstract ideas, but this is the way I lived, and the way I will live. You
know. Oh, well, I'm hooked.
People ask them, you know, what is the biblical basis? What is the theological basis? You know? That's good. I mean, that's good for you. but what does that have to do with me? You know?
Right. So what do you tell them when they ask?
Yeah, when the question is raised, the same thing, that we are everyone. Everyone has that mission to live that bilingual setting, just like what I read. We all speak two languages at the same time. And Matthew 18, verses 18, 19 and 20, when two or three are gathered, if you two agree on anything, that I will give you, you know, the Father in heaven will grant you anything. How difficult that is to come to think more and more. Husband and wife fight all the time, never agree, as it seems. That agreement, you know, as the two individuals. But my one of the artistic experiences is that if you try to bring into the one sound, we always get into the conflict of fighting with one another. But rather, if we take that as a gift, and rather than conforming to one another, but to actually celebrating that gift, it goes much longer and further. This is the same concept here, I think. Unanswered prayer that Jesus asked his disciples. In this case, for us, it's the church. Jesus asking church to live as the answered prayer. As we worship, how two or three can really be one. And I'm extending that to the two or three cultures, two or three languages, theologies. See, when we worship, we are not to conform to one another's view or way of life or standard, but rather to uplift one another and to bring that as our, you know, see if we can learn from each other, sing their songs. Trying to imagine, understand on their view, on their shoes. When that is really happening, that there is the reconciliation and there is the magic, you know. Things are happening, like today's worship service.
Yeah. Today in chapel at Columbia, we had a Kwanzaa service. Mm-hmm. Kwanzaa's, you know, black kind of Christmas-esque. Mm-hmm. And they had drumming. They sang Negro spirituals, and it was very it's very interesting. The energy in the room was just so alive, like everybody, you could feel people really responding in worship, and they didn't feel hindered. They didn't feel like there was any obstacles to worship. It was just very alive. People would clap their hands spontaneously, which is quite a miracle considering Colombia, because it's, you know, Presbyterian, we're not. It's usually, they don't like to do that. So to see that kind of atmosphere generated because of a worship setting that allowed that was really remarkable.
And you saw, it's a black Afro-American students organized and presenting the worship based around the Kwanzaa theory. Yet intentionally they putting other races to lead their worship.
Right. That was fascinating.
That is where the key was taking place.
So they had a Korean pray, the Korean-American pray. They had one of the professors who's an accomplished vocalist.
White.
She sang.
Yeah, white.
Yeah, she's white.
White.
She sang in the Negro spiritual. And so it's fascinating to see these mix of people celebrate and leading in the worship of that. It's fascinating.
And the Jamaican drummer also teaching other white Americans to join him in that drum setting. Intentionally a mixed race, but not only the race, but also here is the mixed culture. See, that is rare in worship. We only sing what we are comfortable and what we know of, but we don't ever cross the boundary. That's the beauty to me. And my interpretation on how beautiful is the feet of those who bring the good news crossing the mountains. Beautiful of the feet. But the Bible doesn't talk much about the beauty in it. But the gospel and preacher, worshiper, in context of beauty is right there. Mm. The one that who crosses that boundary. So to me, it's claiming the Korean-ness, ancestral way, is that on that motive there that I cross that boundary to see what my forefathers may have worshipped if the Christianity came to their time early on. So I'm not an expert. That's where I want to begin with. But then it's okay, you know. Do we have that openness and the room to accept it, explore, and as awkward as it is?
Yeah, but at the same time, as C.S. Lewis once talked about in his book Surprise Joy, if we can find one, and then if we can, you know, enjoy, if we can find, you know, joyful things in there, I think it can be kind of, you know, contagious thing to others. I just want to taste that joy. I think that's why I wanted to join your project.
This is almost Hegelian in a sense, because, you know, you need something. I feel like when you talk about many cultures gathering together, many peoples gathering together to join as one, they each should bring something distinctive or something unique. They have something to offer.
Mm. As your own.
As our own.
Yeah.
And I find that as an Asian American, even if Korean, especially Koreans or even Chinese churches, they share a roof, but then there's Chinese or English, Korean and English. And so then there's a division, so that if you grow up in the English side of it, you almost forget, do I have anything to offer? Is there anything special or unique about what I have to bring? So that when we come into a multi-ethnic setting, we assume that we don't have anything to bring. So I think one of the things that I think is going to be very valuable is as we go back to find out what our parents or our maybe you know, forefathers, that was very unique as they encountered the gospel, as they, you know, saw the beauty of those people's feet, as they said, okay, wow, this is new and this is beautiful, is I think at some point, you know, kind of, you know, Hegel talked about the dialectic
polarity.
Yeah, and so that when I bring something new and you bring something new and we encounter, even in this church, which is attempting and just now starting this process of being multi-ethnic, when I bring something new and they bring something new comes out of that.
Right.
Even.
Well, that's what we call synthesis,
right,
the Hegelian concept. But then the person who does step further is Paul Ricoeur. You might want to read his, because he doesn't go by the synthesis theory, but then each standing had their own identity and more of interaction and relationship.
Right, right.
It's not a melting pot.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. But in order for that something new to happen, these distinctives, which remain distinct, create a new hybrid, not a new hybrid, but a synthesis that exists on its own.
Right. So there's a lot of detail variances just on
that's true.
Model too. So it's a very important question to what do I have to bring to the table?
Mm. You know?
And so this is what I brought today as a sample of taste, because I can go either direction, as I say. I love introducing global music too. How Africans praise, or not so much on other Asians. That's part of which I my long time project, because Ito Lo is wonderful on that. But I brought Korean side today, as fitting to that introduction that you put me on the weblog. So we'll sing some of those and hear what you think and what strikes you, if I can explain better, if that would help, we can do that. So, we'll just go by this over here. I see the drum, that's wonderful. You can just beat that. Dun, 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 dun. Here. In between, Korean is in 6/8, so dun, 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 dun. So whenever people ask, where is this beat coming from? Because this gudgeri says, wow, does it come from gud? Gud is a shamanistic ritual. So, oh no, we are Christians, we're not going to take that rhythm. Same thing as the drum, the devil played, so I'm not going to take that into the church. All the theory, right?
Yeah.
But even a gudgeri, you know the gudgeri jangam, mm-hmm. right? Is actually it's a farmer. Where do you think that came from? A lot of speculation, but it's a farmer. After a long, long day's journey, a walk, labor, and taking the cow, the oxen home. And this is a beat. Oi, yeah, 집에 가자. Oh, 4-legged animal and the 2-legged human being intertwining. Keep on doing that. You have the beat pattern right there. And God's on singing, because I am a musician, and there's always a question to how many candles do we need, and how much of the volume that do we have to yank it to feel the presence of Holy Spirit. Do you know what I'm getting at?
In terms of worship?
Yeah, in terms of worship, right. Singing. Because of the insecurity in us.
How loud do we sing?
Yeah. We want to cover that up with the volume and think that is of the power.
Right.
Same thing with the candles, too. We light up so many candles. And how many candles do we actually need to feel the presence of the Holy Spirit? You see, that's the symbol that which we need to learn, be able to see both ways.
Right.
Right? I'm trying to get back to that original statement. But then, so what I'm encouraging you is that, do you ever hear your own voice and that you feel comfortable with it? Even though it's wrong or insecure, or I don't have that good voice, you know, I sing a wrong pitch. That is all that the stumbling block that which also happens too.
Right.
Yeah. And one of the beauty that I find in the Korean music is that there's no right or wrong note on it. Western, yes. You sing out of tune, out of rhythm, you're wrong. But in Asian music, it's all in relationship. How you fit in with others. Mm-hmm. That I'm going to demonstrate that with my instrument, the philosophy behind it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is all fascinating, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's tone that, you know, I love this stuff.
So, don't be afraid. That's why there's a 내가 산을. You see how much of that shaking that I was, you know, taking it? And there's no one way of doing it. There's a lot of Afro-Americans work in the same way too. A lot of grace notes, they are embellishments, make it beautiful, but at the same time, it's okay. Everybody can do it differently. And that's beauty. Even though tune concerns, you see that? A lot of Korean music has that scooping. Western, no. So feel free, really. 내가 산을 향하여. Okay, we'll change that to the English because in that way that we cannot sing, right? To the high and kindly hills I lift my eyes. Where is there one to rescue me in my plight? Truly from the dear Lord above, one thing I find this hymn, Psalm 121, right?
Right.
Yeah. There's a lot of mountain in Korea, and a lot of this Psalm 121 has the most setting. Psalm 23 is beloved psalm here in American setting. And the 20th century, maybe 19th, you know, during the Reformation period, Psalm 46 was the most popular psalm. I think this is the most popular psalm for the Koreans.
Yeah, once I remember, she's Korean, and she's a youth pastor in Chicago.
Okay.
When she preached based on this verse, she had a hard time because there are not many mountain in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
So she couldn't
introduce what that means.
Depict this one. Uh-huh. But for her, you know, it's just right away when she read this one. Uh-huh. It's just right away she can picture.
Right, right. See that's the beauty of the songwriting, hymn writing, where people, the context, and bringing that, you know, out. So without that contextual setting, that this doesn't is a whole flat to us.
Right.
The refugees hiding in the mountain. Well, frame of direction is also. Koreans are very bad at giving a direction. Why?
We're bad at taking directions too. But
well, compared to Americans, compared to the flatland region, they are trained to give a direction, otherwise you get lost. But the Koreans, you say, you see that mountain up there? You go, that's straight. Good, just go straight, did you see? 그대로 쭉 가요, 그냥. That's it, simple as that. Yeah. You know? And that's where the help is coming from.
Professor Ho, I think they learn from you. Candlelight Chapel, we once had worship based on psalm,
okay.
And then one of Korea students, he sang this mm-hmm. song, mm-hmm. and the whole service was just about just music service. Mm-hmm. So when I first attended the service, I just, wow, how do they, you know, come up with mm-hmm. that liturgy in a session? Mm-hmm. And then now I realize they learn from you. Most of them were, you know, just students.
Yes,
so.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, and. This is readily available in both languages, and the hymnal has a good selection of this nature, Korean and English and different styles.
You know, you were talking earlier about, well, the churches in, you know, Asian churches primarily, you know, you got the Chinese service, you have the English service, Korean service, English service. Now, I didn't, when I was at the Chinese church, I didn't really, I don't know what type of songs they sang in the Chinese service at all. But I don't feel like I would have gotten this type of culture even there.
That's
the thing. You know, even the people who are from China or Korea who moved here, they're not even that, they're not this in tune with their ancestry. I mean, like, I don't feel like there's even fix a solution there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go even further back.
You know, that's the, I think that's where, you know, I feel like the church, if it's doing its role well, it does a great deal of remembering and then a great deal of imagining. When a church doesn't do well, I think it's just focused on the present.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is our present circumstance? What is, you know, it just ministers to the needs of right now without giving hope for a future that doesn't look like the present. And I feel like a lot of churches, doesn't matter what culture they are kind of trapped in the present. So I think that I think it's really imperative for, as believers, for us to kind of, what was it that made our, like, I mean, I know Koreans is to be a very proud and ethnocentric and stubborn people. How did they ever submit to Jesus Christ? What would ever make them bow their knees to this foreign God, a Jewish Messiah? What would make them sing his praises? And so I think that's part of the remembering process, I feel, that's so important especially for my generation, where it becomes even more foreign. Like, it feels, it's kind of weird, but it's not weird in another sense. Like, this is home.
Mm-hmm.
It's like coming home and eating food that I don't get at McDonald's or, you know, Chick-fil-A or whatever. This is really kind of, on one hand, it's refreshing.
But why the local churches would not have this information resource to begin with is the regret that we all sharing. If church would teach us these songs and, you know, options were given, would be different, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, even if I were to go back to the Chinese church and say, I want to learn, you know, how did we worship back in China or Indonesia, wherever it was, I don't know that I'd get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't know that anybody would know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the reason for that would be. I mean, I just, like I said, I don't know what songs they sing, but I do feel like it's just pretty much the standard Western hymns translated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing that original. I mean, I would say they're in the same boat as the English services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that generation, that was, so if the survival was their priority, do we have to, is the issue the same in our generation? Is what I want to ask. Are you, because when you are in a survival mode, your decisions are very much limited on that setting.
Right. And also, David, as you said, probably there's nothing there, but personally, I feel like, you know, always this connection or abrupt cutting hurt us. I think that's why we are hurting right now. So if we can remember what we had before, it probably not just worship song, but our own song or our own art. And with our imagination, if we can connect that one to the future, I think that would be awesome.
I mean, I would agree, you know, leading worship, and the more I've led worship lately, you know, I did worship at an InterVarsity retreat. It was just the Georgia students InterVarsity retreat. So InterVarsity is kind of segregated in terms of their ministry. You know, they have their Asian fellowships, they have their English fellowships, and it's interesting to see them try to put that together. It's very forced, kind of, not very natural. But you know, for me, leading worship and choosing music, I've gotten more and more jaded, just because, I feel the same way as you, David, you know, in terms of the songs that we, you know, all the popular songs that most people want to hear and want to sing, finding that fine line between, you know, giving people the opportunity to worship with what they want to hear, but also challenging them to go outside of that. And, you know, I try to communicate with the speaker or the pastor as much, and they're like, well, this is my topic. Well, then I take this topic and I go to worship music, and worship music is all about the same thing, every song. I mean, like, you could, you know, it's all about how good Jesus is. There's nothing about, there's very little about, you know, like, as much suffering. I mean, people don't want to hear that as much. So it's...
This class, this semester, I just finished my class on worship and music, and one of the students did a project on the praise music and indexing it, because that she said the same thing, but then you look into it carefully that there are a lot of theology that which can be used according to the church here, biblical stance, and the worship, the content-wise, it can be liturgical, but just there's no resource that indexes like the way that the hymnal indexes in the back, that you, which you can readily you know, see to find it. See, this is a whole information out of the hymnal that which you can look through the biblical, you know, indexing, the tune, the title, and the meter, you know, the content. So she did that as a project out of the 50, the most favorite 50 praise and worship songs. And it was wonderful. And it, I think a lot of work like that will help us eventually to, because I'm not against praise and worship. That there are very good content that can be shared, but then it's just, is it the same way into the same flow going into the praise and worship setting from the traditional historical global and ecumenical worship are also being shared? Otherwise, you'll be isolated. You know, you'll be stale. Just. So that this is all same theme going on, and that which helps us to ask, to look into, and that's what excites me as how we open up into the someone else's song. You may say that's a fusion, to a certain degrees. But also, you know, out of that process, some of the genuine expressions are emerging. And when that is added with the life-converting moment, and it the meaning, the symbols are layered on it, and layered. You know, why Amazing Grace is so popular, rich, and will last, you know, long period of time, because they're layered meaning on it. From the slave experience, you know, the someone who converted out of that experience, in Afro-American context as well as American context, so many stories of God's salvation is at that one hymn. One hymn. It has taken off as a metaphorical, symbolic identity. And do we have a hymn like that in our own cultural entity and setting? See, that's what I'm trying to find, as at the same time creating things too. This has taken 120. I'll just keep adding that. Have you sung this?
No.
No? Okay, this is simple call and response. Aharadiya, sangsadiya means nothing.
Hence the translation.
Well, that's not a translation.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah, it can be. It's like a nonsense syllabic word. Like a fa la 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 la.
Got it.
So, it's just a simple emotion, but that changes with the speed of this hymn. And this is much easier. Call and response. Call and response. It's better to not to look at it actually, but if you want to follow, fine. But just repeat after me, that's what it is. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Aharadiya, samsadiya. In God's temple, praise to Yahweh. Aharadiya, samsadiya. In the heavens, praise to Yahweh. Aharadiya, samsadiya. 성소에서 찬양하라. Aharadiya, samsadiya. God has acted, praise to Yahweh. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Great the wonders, praise to Yahweh. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Praise to Yahweh, God the highest. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Praise to Yahweh, God most holy. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Aharadiya, samsadiya. Aharadiya, samsadiya. 나팔소리 우렁차게 어화디야 상사디야 검은 고와 비파 타며 어화디야 상사디야 Pluck the thistle harp and lyre 어화디야 상사디야 Sound the drum beat join the dancing 어화디야 상사디야 Strings and pipes give praise to Yahweh 어화디야 상사디야 어화디야 상사디야 어화디야 상사디야 깽깽깽깽깽 가리치면서 어화디야 상사디야 Banging and crashing the symbols and sounding gongs. Oh, Hadiya Sangsadiya. 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 Let everything that lives and breathes come and give praise to Yahweh God. It works all the time. For the Koreans as well as Americans. I think this is what when I call it a symbolic encounter, because there are so many different layers of the meaning of this, that which combines us all together, isn't it? And that's what I call rich presentation. They didn't sing this at Emory.
They didn't.
you know.
I think I have to take your class in Colombia. These days, I'm in a worship planning team.
Yeah.
But as we always said, you know, I have no idea what Korean worship is. So whenever they ask my opinion, actually, there's nothing I can offer.
Well, we have. I'm teaching next fall, just on that Korean worship and preaching, and we'll put out all the resource there is on the table. But the conference that precedes will be something that you will really enjoy attending, because there's one leader among our group who would preach in tongue in this style.
Wow, what does that sound like? I mean,
well. It sounds like this. Here.
I want to now. I didn't know about it before.
This is his composition. His name is Seungnam Kim. And I think I promised you, David, put that on the web so that you would see the example of that.
Okay.
Yeah. This is Psalm 1. In old days, people used to read like this. 복되어라 이런 사람 오직 기쁜 마음으로 주의 율법 낙을 삼아 밤낮으로 묵상하네. That's what it is, right? In reading a newspaper, they read like this.
So you know, in the church, right? When people preach whatever, they are like, and it's just like that.
What kind of things do they say?
Something like that.
What does that mean?
It means
amen. go on, you know, preach, you know, say more.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
This is called chuimse, which we are not just sitting block or stone, but actually is a participation of the community.
You know, that's really attractive to me, but I never thought that was
Korean
natural.
Tradition.
Yeah,
it is.
I always thought that it was. You know, it's funny now is being in a kind of white American kind of where you don't say anything unless they tell you, okay, say something. This is very interesting to be.
That's a very communal setting that we interact. Call and response is a very authentic, ancient form of expression.
Because, like, I have a black friend who we talk about these kinds of things, and he says there's a lot of similarities.
Oh yes.
He's actually serving at a Korean church.
Mm.
And he says there's so many similarities between
black
culture and Korean culture.
At CTF?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I was like, yeah, but it feels like, and you know, a lot of our Korean youth or Korean American youth, they love black culture and they love black music.
Mm-hmm.
But I never thought that this was kind of our ancient culture as well, to call and respond.
Yeah,
to kind of talk back to the person. That's really exciting.
And that is also exciting to see you get excited, because Koreans say, what about second generations, English speaking young Koreans, will they buy this? You know,
I don't know if they'll hop by it. They might think it's pretty weird. But I mean, it's no hip hop, but it'd be interesting if you put it over a beat. I mean, it might be cool.
Well, so this is how it goes. So putting that into a tune that which my friend composed on this. 복되어라 이런 사람 악인에게 좋지 않고 죄인의 길 걷지 않고 오만한데 앉지 않네. 복되어라 이런 사람 오직 기쁜 마음으로 주의 율법 낙을 삼아 밤낮으로 묵상하네. And then they read this. Can you read that in English? The same feeling that which I was putting it on? See if that would come out. Give it a try. Verse 3. They are like trees. You know what that is?
Yeah.
They are like trees planted by streams of water, bearing fruit in due season, with leaves that do not wither, everything they do shall prosper. See, I just didn't read it. you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That is Korean, even though it's in English. And maybe that's the humaneness. We're not just simply reading. You know, I think there's a reading in Eastern style and the Western style. And I'll say authentic Eastern style can also read English with emotion in it.
So this is almost like cantor, like
call and response.
But you know, even the Jewish or Orthodox,
call and response. This is a whole universal, archaic, old traditional way of performance.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, there's no music. Always wrote, call and response. The one who knows teaches them, so the people follow. Sometimes group against group, antiphonal. But you listen as what that sound exchanges back and forth. See, the danger in the praise worship is that you miss that element.
The back and forth.
Yeah, you're always one directional.
Yeah. We've talked about this. How it just seems.
Either
people are watching this as a performance, or it's just there's no real. It's you could almost be a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even see the words. You just sing the melody, like you know, it's karaoke. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
None of these words have any meaning to you. It's just when the word shows up, you sing the word.
Body. follow it.
I sing the word that's in front of me, and when it's gone, I forgot the word. I don't know the words to the song. Yeah. You got to show me the words.
We have to claim our the way that we were intended to sing in the beginning, very beginning, which is this call and response.
Wow, this is beautiful. So you're saying he can preach like this?
Oh yes, he can go. Uh-huh.
Wow, I can't wait to see.
And he improvises. He reads the gospel and then he starts singing. You know, and the people making a response a lot, and he curses, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because it's an archaic artistic form. Even though he curses at you, you are just laughing at it.
And
you don't take it personally.
Also, this song Jang itself, you know, it contained the curse because it's usually just common people when they want to criticize to the upper class people, they use this song. So
it's a catharsis experienced. Even though you are being reprimanded, you are seeing
that. Interesting, because like so much of like music is protest.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know, even reggae music is protest.
Yeah.
It's a language of protest.
Yeah.
So even rap is protest.
Sure.
They're actually, especially good rap.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about dancing and getting, girls and having sex. If you get into the origins of rap and hip hop, it's about, gang warfare, getting out of gang warfare, talking against the system, the powers. So this is.
What do you think the Homer's Odyssey originated?
Wow.
It's a story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all poetry. Prophecy.
If that's the case, then who were we protesting?
On this case, or
at least if this is part of a Korean tradition, in terms of creating a singing way of protest.
We have our Amun, you know. It's used to capitalism.
Mammonism, right?
So
our own, our own sins.
Yeah.
We are naming the sins. And also we are laughing at it too.
I want to recommend one book where you probably can get a sense how these things were same. Wang and Nam, do you think it can be good?
I always use that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The Man of the King. Or
Did
you see that?
King's Man.
I've heard of it. I know that it's kind of very controversial.
Yeah.
For its
kind
of homosexual.
It was interesting that in Korean where that is unspoken, but that movie just hit the chord. that chord of the people, right into the, and it became so popular. But it does create the catharsis, all interwoven. The king watching the musicians, the dancers, and putting that as a stage to ridicule his subjects, and also that we are watching was his play with this main character, and that we are seeing ourselves, all kind of interwoven. And that's where we are experiencing that the kairos, something moved us. We don't know what it is, that art form that moved us. Mm-hmm. And that's what needs to happen in the worship setting.
That's fascinating. Recently Peter Rollins came to Columbia, mm-hmm. came to Atlanta. And one of the things he does, he's from Ireland, and he talks about setting up, he doesn't call them worship services, he calls it transformance art.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's an experience, because he says, when you encounter God, you don't really process it, your mind is kind of blown away, and your life is changed. You don't know how, you can't explain it. Mm-hmm. When you meet Jesus, you don't really know what exactly happened. It's like kind of like falling in love. I don't know, one minute I was fine, and now I'm desperately, I'm going crazy. I can't think of anything else. Same thing. So he tries to set up experiences that elicit kind of, not a intellectual response, but a kind of visceral response.
Yeah.
And I feel like this, there's something visceral here. Just like when I watch Korean dramas, it doesn't have to be Korean. Like when I watch even Crouching Tiger, some wushu, or is it wushu? Yeah, whatever film that is, there's something I understand that I can't explain. Like even when somebody else asks me, like, what just happened? I'm like, I can't explain it to you. I can't explain why I'm crying, but something happened, and I got it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, something that moved.
Right.
Yeah.
That's, wow.
And that happens, perhaps, does it happen differently then? For the different person?
Maybe. Well, like you said, I think they're, depending on, because we're in a postmodern culture, we don't really know what moves. You might have an experience that moves a great number of people, but there's always minorities. Mm-hmm. Somebody is marginalized at all times. Mm-hmm. So we need to create a diversity of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So different people can come and be moved.
Then again, also there's opposition to that, because they feel it's dangerous to play with that dimension, contemplation. Meditation fine, but don't go into the contemplation. because you can really control. I think control comes in. That way, as to all different possibilities also can happen as a dangerous ground dictates.
And, but the culture is going to do that anyway. Pop culture, artists are going to be pushing the edge of the art.
Yeah.
So it'd be, I think if the church doesn't do that, if we as worshipers don't try to kind of create this space where this type of movement can happen, then I think we forfeit a lot of that ground to the culture.
So in a way, we play the gatekeeper function in the church setting. I edited this hymnal, but the work is more viewed as a gatekeeping than being creative.
I see.
Because you are putting into a document that is accepted or acceptable,
right?
And shunning out all others that are not in it, whether you want it or not.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a continuing struggle as to how that plays. But musically speaking, that I found the Korean music has much more freedom and the way that which invites how others are interacting with you or with one another. Let me demonstrate this. That's the reason that I wrote this. Not to show off my virtuosity. But the Western instrument is for the virtuosity, virtuoso, so the daiva concept. You know? See how skillful, how well you play. But for the Koreans, or the Asian instruments are more how you fit in with others. See, you see this? Play the scale. They never play on an open string. Always putting a finger and the flute recorders too. You always start never open. Yeah, never use the open sound. I think it's against the philosophy. There, you live that as a kind of not even a last option. There's you just don't use it. Always starting on that. You see, I'm just using this. It's two string instrument. My first reaction would be, where's the fret? You know, guitar. You know, definite pitch. You can start there, or if you want to raise it higher. So there's no definite pitch. You can fit into where the people are, the voices at. Right? You can move up and down and see that's what I say relational. Huh. You know, this is to fit into your voice. And see this how fluctuating the sound is? One finger. Almost to six, just going down, right? So the vibration is like going up and down. You see that big room to play with? That's where it is. So some fast instruments will go, and the slow instrument will they, like the piri, daegeum. And that's how you those two or three many instruments that fit together and interacting. That's where that aesthetic value is at. Not in the melody, not in the rhythm, but how well you play together on given time. That's a whole total different concept, but that's where the ensemble is. I don't know who taught what, but is this imitating our voice? My voice is imitated by the instrument, or because I find a lot of the Ohara Diya. A lot of the Korean music has that trill on it. Is it because we are copying this? Or is this instrument copying our voice? I don't know. But yet, that relationship to one another, always mimicking or reinforcing it. I just personally find this very fascinating to continue to compare it, because I'm so naturally drawn to the cello, same way I do it sitting down like this. But how this is so different. But then I come to appreciate the cello playing even more with a great intensity, knowing that is the way that is made up differently. And one more thing. There's no definite pitch. There's no right or wrong. There's a quality of the sound. I'm trying to, you know, get out of this. That, I think, takes the virtuosity of the instrument playing. But even to a novice player, something that comes much easier on me. I didn't intend to make this song, but it just came easier on me. And it sounds much more like Asian, Korean to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Nobody taught this, but that this instrument is kind of limited. Yeah, mm-hmm. Limited in that way. I'll probably not do create the same melody like that on the cello. Probably come in a different way. But somehow this one makes me to say it easier. Mm-hmm. You know, same question, you know, as... Is there certain things that makes me easier to express with my own body as being who I am? Mm-hmm. And what is it? You know? And how does that being offered or shared with others as in community? And is that recognized in a worship setting? Mm-hmm. Because it has to be natural. It's not forced, it's not... So if we consider our instrument as a, you know, as a body of Christ, if we consider our body as an instrument of God,
right.
You know, and what is that natural, easy, comfortable setting that can speak and be shared with others? So, lifetime project.
Oh, thank you for sharing. That was beautiful.
Yes.
Makes me want to learn some.
Me too.
Doesn't it? Yeah. Because we express with our body, with our voice, with our gestures. And often that are not encouraged. And that is what is encouraged through the art form. Or accept it, or, you know, but also same. It works the same way with music.
You know, the funny mm-hmm. thing about Protestantism
mm-hmm.
is that it's expressionless.
Mm.
Yeah. Somewhere along
all in here, right?
The Protestant Reformation,
yeah.
They said, okay, they're iconoclastic. We don't want any images of God. We don't want any images of Mary, no mm. St. Peter, mm. none of this. And so they took down everything except the cross, right? Mm. Mm. So... there's something missing, and then those missionaries
mm-hmm.
are the ones that went to China and Korea, and you know, and so I feel like
mm-hmm.
now that we're coming all the way back, we're mm-hmm. in America now.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like we're having a hard time recovering an appreciation for art and
yeah.
beauty and
see,
music.
Yeah, that's another Reformation in the church.
Another Reformation needs to take place.
Yeah, and.
Wow.
I just recently learned from Don Selliers, from retired professor at Emory. Mm-hmm. He said this beautifully as he was expressing the art and theology, that we ought to learn how to listen with our ears, you know, our eyes, listen with our eyes.
Mm.
We need to be able to see with our ears. As we are just looking at the visual arts, prints, I want to share St. John's Bible. They put all that image with the Bible, the Western calligraphy, with the new See, the Bibles were used to be handed down with a calligraphy art.
Right.
And there was a lot of the paint, the pictures, designs, and cuts were drawn with the calligraphy, and we call St. John's Bible, which was just printed. This humongous project among Roman Catholics. Hmm. And as you're reading the Bible, that particular Bible, the printed version, somehow you're listening. Listening the voice, the image coming out. You're not just seeing, you're not just reading it, but you're listening the music behind it.
Hmm.
And as, at the same time, as we listen to certain music, does it bring the image to the, does it presenting the image to the people with the words? Or, you know, particular music that you hear in a worship experience, that it brings you to another time zone, right? Another setting, that when you discover Jesus the first time, certain song, that attachment, right? The images, certain words that helps us to see. It's just the music, but then we see something.
Yeah.
There are some certain experiences that we have, right? Why is that? How is that? It's just not flat dimension, but it is all five sensor mixed environment. And I'm particularly interested in that, you know, the junction that the art form or the faith form doesn't stay as it is, but it's not a fusion, but I think it's
transcending.
Yeah, transcending, right, transforming. And taking into a different indescribable state. Yeah. And I think that is what we call Kairos moment, a conversion, or high time in worship. Whatever you name it, you know, ecstasy. So we never know which strikes you the most. You know. This is a one recent hymn writing by Korean American, and the bishop is the one, Haejeong Kim, United Methodist, retired bishop, United Methodist Church, is the one who wrote the text. And this is where his dream, it was first written in English and then put into Korean, and then music was added on.
Thank you.
new composition came right here among Korean Americans. And his own Kim, the Bishop Kim, says he took this on from the Martin Luther King's speech. I have a vision, I have a dream.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is one of the gifts. It's in this hymnal. Yeah. So all the copies are from this hymnal. Yeah. So the way as that Korean American can present as to the other churches as. But this is another hymn that which you know. Praise and worship setting in Korea. But then it was translated into English. And it has a feature that is very strikingly Korean, that is, has a pitch going up and down, the low down to the G, and it goes up way up to the high E. You know this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But this is only English translation. Edward Poitras was a missionary in Methodist Seminary in Korea, and he has done this beautiful translation of it. Have you sung this one?
I don't recognize it.
No. Everyone who longs for the boundless love of God, everyone who hopes for the coming of God's peace, the Lord God who created all things beautiful and good, loves you more than you can ever fully know. So now you recognize it, right? Yeah. I use this as in seminars with Anglo-Americans, and they don't seem to have any trouble singing it. And it really touches them, especially when Koreans are singing with this gusto, loud, the pitch. Yeah. So there are things that are happening in a current setting, and new compositions, and as well as praise and worship music contributions coming in to be recognized as a standardized hymnal repertoire. So these are the kind of things that I want to share with you. And wow,
thank you for sharing. Do you guys have any questions or parting thoughts, stories, comments?
These are not concepts, you just have to experience it. And it's a shared thing. If you feel, oh, it's possible, yeah, that could work, and then that's it. And we do and challenge to see if that actually can be shared. And it doesn't work as an individual effort. No matter how good that you feel now, yeah, that could work, but it needs reinforcing as a community. Because you can really teach that these matters on one lesson setting. This is a learned behavior, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like playing an instrument.
Right.
It may sound good. You may be inspired and motivated, but it requires a practice, hard practice. And a shared community to play together, to see the value in it.
Right. Can I ask you to close this in prayer?
Okay.
And I'd love to ask you to pray for the courage to, for particularly this generation and this kind of a people that somehow have a hard time remembering who we are and where we came from.
Sure, this is part of prayer for the Lord's Day, the beginning part, but we can do the opening prayer as a as a beginning, and then we can open up for the, our individual prayers to continue. One thing I encourage you, we have 2x2. So this is the one exercise that I ask people to do as being a bilingual, right? Intentionally being bilingual. When two or three competing cultures are met, languages are met, how do we worship? I give this as a solution. You know, you write down the liturgy together and put them in the same line and see if you can follow through together. A kind of common ground, right? So Katie and I will do Korean, and your
Jake
and David will do it in English, and see if we can do it together.
Just the prayer of the day.
Yeah, let us pray. See how that happens. Ready?
Yeah.
전능하신 하나님. Yeah. There's a certain thing, certain rules in it. I was hoping. If we want to do it together, this is a monastic exercise actually. We wait one on another. Wait on one another. Wait for each other, which means. So after finishing a line, we breathe. And then listen for others to finish. And then we go. Right. Again. 전능하신 하나님. 우리 모두의 마음이 주님께 열려지고 우리 모두의 소원이 주님께 알려집니다. 주님께는 어떤 비밀도 숨길 수 없나이다. 우리 마음의 모든 생각을 성령의 감동으로 깨끗이 씻어주셔서 우리로 주님을 온전히 사랑하게 하시며 주님의 거룩하신 이름을 귀히 높이게 하옵소서. 우리 주 그리스도의 이름으로 기도합니다. 아멘. I believe this is a communal liturgy, communal prayer. And two languages can get together. We can read the prayer at the same time listening each other as they finish their prayer and be affirmed and confirmed that we are one body in Christ. And that is our prayer, isn't it? A very, very strong symbolic action that we demonstrate. Yeah, we are going to wait for each other. And I think that is the answer that Jesus is seeking in us. To have that mind, maybe we can accomplish something. So that was my prayer, our prayer, and also end of my preaching.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.